Mama, take this badge off of me. I can't use it anymore. It's getting dark, too dark to see. I feel like I'm knocking on heaven's door.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another Commission podcast. Today, we're talking about the 2016 movie, recent one, Hell or High Water, starring Jeff Bridges, Chris Pine, Ben Foster, Gil Birmingham, which we'll get to a little bit more of that in a minute. This is another a special football edition of the Commission podcast. This was the fulfillment of we had enough fantasy football players this year to run two leagues out of Bald Move. Everyone kicked in, I think it was $30 for two 10-man leagues, and the winner of the fantasy football tournament or championship, it was agreed upon that the prize would be a Commission podcast. We had the second winner, Lindsay Blodgett. She won. Her team was Vominos Pests, which I thought was pretty cool. She said, "I was the last team to make the playoffs, but I got hot and lucky at the same time. Thank you guys so much for allowing the Bald Move Fantasy Football League." Hey, no problem. I mean, we get paid either way, and people enjoy it. I wish I could play. I guess I haven't been able to play fantasy football for like 3 or 4 years now because I just don't have the time. And that's one of the definitely contributing factors of me not enjoying football as much. I know it. Well, let's, before we get, she explained the reason she picked this movie was that I think the acting in this movie is superb. The entire cast did an amazing job. All the performances subtly brilliant and real. I want to give people a chance to check out on this movie. This movie has gotten a little bit of Oscar buzz as far as some of the performances and the writing specifically.
Okay.
It is a modern Western in the vein of like, No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
And
a lot in the vein.
A lot in the vein. But it also has some, I think there's some influences from like season one True Detective and particularly the landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
And even some of the cinematography sensibilities, a little bit of Elmore Leonard and some of the dialogue, because I thought even though at times this movie is grim, it was a more consistently funny and amusing in the laconic kind of dialogue delivery than something like No Country for Old Men, which wasn't fun, even a little bit funny.
Right.
At least I don't think it was.
Maybe a moment or two with Harrelson, but
Tommy Lee Jones might have had some funny remarks about some of the idiots he was working with, but
it's sparse on the comedy.
The littlest sugar to the lighten the load. So if you guys want to have check this out, it's not streaming on any service. You have to, you know, it's still kind of a first run movie. It just came out in August, so. We watched it on Amazon. But if you want to check it out now, because we're about to... if you want to check it out, let me stop stammering for a minute. If you want to check it out, probably stop the podcast now and pick it up later, because we're about to spoil the shit out of it. She says, Jeff Bridges' reaction to his partner's death and his reaction after killing Tanner should win him an Oscar. It's also one of my favorite performances from Chris Pine. I think he really stole the show. My two favorite scenes from his character were the bar scene after hearing his brother's death. I also love the tension in the roadblock scene where the cop checks his license.
Mm-hmm.
She says, Ben Foster is great in everything he does. His portrayal of the passionate yet unhinged brother Tanner was no different. I love the final scene between the two brothers where they express their love for each other following by a fuck you. Let's talk about our feelings in the movie for a bit before we turn to Lindsay's thoughts. Okay. What did you think of the movie?
I'd say probably mostly good, but I'd say probably okay. I was not super thrilled by the movie. I think she's right when she says the performances are excellent. Pretty much across the board, I think everybody just nails it. And it feels almost like they don't even have to try. They just fall naturally into the roles. But I don't know that the movie excited me very much. Like the plot and the narrative.
I am a lot more enamored of this movie than you are. Number one, I think I have a softer spot for Westerns in general. And I thought that Jeff Bridges, like, teleports his Rooster Cogburn character from True Grit into a modern, you know, Texas Ranger style lawman. In fact, it wouldn't surprise me if this was a if I found out that this was a remake of a Robert Ford, you know, kind of Western about a man trying to hold on to his family ranch and having to rob a bunch of crooked banks that are trying to do a bunch of crooked deals. That, you know, this is a very old Western tale, and it's funny that some of the things that the old Westerns are based on are kind of come back in the form of predatory lending and this crushing poverty and things changing. And I liked those themes, and like she and you say, the performances, especially, I agreed. Like, there's a 10-second stretch there where Jeff Bridges avenges his partner's death, where like, I utterly think that was a genuine reaction from this old man. Like, just the carnal joy of slaying someone that killed you and avenging your partner, and then the realization that it's not going to bring him back, and the excitement and the grief. And
No, it's incredible.
That's exactly how I think it would happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love that scene. I love there are a couple of scenes in here that I love, and I like, you know, a lot of the robbery stuff too.
Yeah.
I think it just lingers on it as long as it needs to. It doesn't do more than it should.
Yeah, and you compare it to like Point Break, which is dangerous to make a comparison in any movie to Point Break. But, you know, like, there's this these overwrought, overplanned heist, and this is just seat of the pants, like, but smart, but not like supervillain Joker style smart.
Right, not the supervillain plan, but not a smash and grab. It's kind of somewhere between that feels natural for this duo.
And also, I remember thinking clearly about, you know, around the second gun robbery, it's like, well, shit, this is Texas. Half of everybody's packing at any one time, and they fucking address that, and it's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
So I thought that stuff was really great. I think that it seems like this movie's primary sin is it's not No Country for Old Men.
And it wants to be, I think.
But
a little too much.
I mean, Jesus Christ! It's so weird to see movies pilloried like that, because, like, you say 3:10 to Yuma isn't awesome because it's not as grim and good as Unforgiven. Like, I don't know. Like, it's almost like if this isn't the Western genre, why does it have to be up there with the very best example of what it can be to be considered a good, if not even a great film? And I felt like a lot of the online reviews, honestly, a lot of the online reviews were exceptional. Like, this has got like a 98% fresh rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, wow.
But you and I forget the guy's, he's taken over, one of the guest writers on Roger Ebert's site.
I couldn't help but, like, I read his review and I was like, wow, he is echoing basically everything I thought about this movie.
Yeah.
Right down to, like, the critiques of some of the actors' careers. And I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, that's exactly what I thought about Ben Foster, too. But, yeah, I think his name is Peter Sapsinski. I don't know. I guess I'm not the right audience for this or something. I just have a hard time with what I think is the central core message of this, which is the plight of the poor white country folk.
What is your problem with that?
I'm just far less concerned with that than I am with maybe some other plights at the moment.
I don't know. I mean, they're equally so. If you look at, like, it's kind of the inverse of the, you know, plight of poor urban populations, right? I mean, you get to a situation where you've got like a Flint, Michigan, or a Detroit, or a Post, Texas, where things are so bad and have been so bad for so many generations that anyone that could have left has left, and you've just got this continuing downward spiral of poverty and alcohol abuse and domestic violence and poor schools and no tax money to do shit, and it gets worse and worse, and the people left there have no, like, lifeboat to get out of. It's like, I think it's poor and impoverished and uneducated populations anyway are a problem that we need to solve, and
Sure, I agree with all that.
And, you know, it's like I kept on thinking, it's like, you know, why would someone live here? But I don't think anyone does choose to live here. Like
yeah.
the Chris Pine character, if he lived, you know, in New York City, he probably would have been smart enough to get to a good school, and he would have, you know, had a lot more opportunities for employment, and he wouldn't be betting all of his desperate gambles on some crazy, you know, scheme to get back at the banks and win his ranch back so he can get oil money off of it.
Right, right. Which, you know, I'm aware of all that, and I think, yes, it's certainly a tragedy of its own, but it's hard for me to look at someone like a Jeff Bridges in this movie and say that I am impressed by that character.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think I don't know why he's throwing all of these jokes, I guess, jokes around at his partner, these racially horrific jokes. He's an offensive character to me.
He's, well, why is he worse than Dean Norris from Breaking Bad?
He's probably not. Dean Norris is an offensive character at the beginning of that, too.
Sure, sure.
And then he morphs into something more. But I couldn't get past the stuff he's doing with his partner here long enough for their relationship to really sink in. Because it feels like a very, very one-sided thing from Jeff Bridges, where he's like, haha, buddy, you should be taking this all in stride. No, fuck you, man. I'm waiting for you to retire and die, so yeah, I don't have to put up with this shit.
The only time Gil Birmingham, which I know primarily as the head of the werewolf clan from Twilight.
Yeah.
The only time that you are ever, because he kind of, I mean, he's not like, hey, shut the fuck up, but he kind of wears this like look of disdain about the way Jeff Bridges is acting throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time you get a hint that he is not hating him is in the hotel when he walks out the door and he kind of like a slight smile cracks on his face.
Right.
But I agree. Like, if you're going to have this dynamic, you got to have the other guy bust him back so you could see that this is something that they just do.
Right, and that's why I guess it felt a little more maybe natural with Dean Norris, because you had Gomi there,
right,
busting right back. You
right.
know?
Like, if they had made a movie about you and I, and like if only you called me fuckface all the time and I just had like this hard-lipped expression every time,
right.
It would be like,
boy, that Jim guy's a real asshole.
Jim's an asshole, but if like I gave it back just as much, then you'd be like, oh, this is how. Because, you know, that's, for mostly worse or better, that's kind of how a lot of men, well, most men relate. Like, we're so fucking emotionally constipated.
Right.
And I'm mostly frustrated with myself because I'm aware of it, yet I feel like I'm a person who, I don't know, I have an intense phobia for tree leaves or something. And like someone says, hey, there's no reason to be afraid of tree leaves. And I'm like, mm-hmm. I believe it, and I accept the truth of the assertion, but fuck, it's really hard to touch those tree leaves because I just think they're going to bite me.
Yeah, well,
you know,
dangerous.
You're right.
Get over it with that character.
I don't know why. I wonder if there was a little bit of like insurgency from Gil Birmingham where he just himself didn't. He played it a little bit like he didn't think this was cool. No, I mean, there's no way. There's no way on a production like
this.
Like
a director can't
yeah, he'd be
slide.
Like, look, Gil, I get it. You don't like this, but your character is going to bust his balls right back.
And so, he does a couple times, but it never feels like an equal thing there. It always feels like Jeff Bridges is just shitting on this guy.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
And so I didn't really like his character very much. Granted, I think Jeff Bridges did an excellent job in a couple of scenes where he really just brought it. But hard for me to identify with that guy. And then, like I said, I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly sensitive to, you know, the whole house. The whole thing happened around the housing market, right? That bust. It was like this town got wiped out by that. They were already poor. The banks were lending them money they couldn't afford to pay back.
And then
they seized all their properties when they couldn't pay it back. I mean,
right.
there's a piece of graffiti at the very beginning that says something about that.
Like, you see all these reverse mortgages nowadays, which is essentially when you get older and, mm-hmm. you know, you've got a lot of equity in your house, or maybe it's paid off. But, you know, because a lot of people don't have pensions and they've been raided, they make this pitch that they will – you know, essentially, instead of you paying the bank pays you and they own ever more part of your house.
Right.
And that strikes me as like, okay, I mean, you know, you're no longer, it's taking away of your, instead of transferring wealth to future generations, which is kind of how we've done things up until now, you're essentially you're sucking that wealth to sustain yourself in the present, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's an especially predatory tactic when you've got mineral rights involved, where like
Sure. This
old woman who died seems like from some sort of cancer with a lot of expensive medical bills, and they had to mortgage the house, and there's back taxes, and the bank for $47,000 is going to get millions and millions of dollars of return from that.
Yeah. And they know it.
Because
and you can
they
see
had
it on that guy's face.
They had this whole family bent over the barrel.
Right.
And that's an interesting story. And it's like when you think about it, that's something right out of what you would hear you know, in these old West towns where there's like a gold rush or there's a railroad going through and there's this guy buying up all the property and fucking, you know, like Harrison Ford. Was it Harrison Ford in that movie? Oh, that's Cowboys and Aliens. Shit. Not the reference. But essentially, it's the rich cattle rancher that like dams up the water supply.
Right. Yeah.
To force people, like, there's nothing wrong with the property except for what he caused. Now he's going to buy it for pennies on the dollar and fuck you over for it.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the plots in 310 to Yuma.
Might have been.
As well. Yeah, because wasn't Christian Bale's, like, his property was all fucked over on water rights or something?
I think so, yeah.
Anyway.
The river got diverted.
But it's interesting. But that's kind of like, I don't know how common that is in Texas or whatever, but that's a modern way to tell that tale. Like, you know, predatory lending substituting for, you know, unscrupulous ranchers.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's not a bad story for sure. It's a pretty good story. It's just something about it that didn't quite fit together for me.
I do think it sagged a bit in the middle, but I didn't mind it because anytime I see just a dumb fuck character that's self-destructive with a person that is got a reasonable head on their shoulders, it drives me fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, there's many points of film I'm like, why did Chris Pine need his brother? It seems like he could just have robbed these banks solo and done a better job.
Maybe. I mean, certainly if he had a more competent partner, they would have done a better job. I'm not sure. I've never robbed a bank, but right. I imagine two people is better than one.
But the way Chris Pine wanted to do it is only go at the very beginning, you know, early in the day when there's going to be no one there. And you're going to avoid all the problems of an armed population in Texas. That's you know, I would say that a lot of gun owners' mindset. I'm going to say a lot, but a certain percentage, because I've been on, you know, gun owner forums and whatnot. Is I wish a motherfucker would, you know. And I feel like in Texas, I lived in Texas in this region of Texas for 2 or 3 years as a teenager. And I feel like that is, like, you know, there's a lot of guys that are going into that bank, and it's not in the forefront, but in the back of their mind, it's like, oh, man, wouldn't it be awesome if some fucker came in here and I could
save
the day.
Everybody wants to be the hero, right?
Sure. Who doesn't?
Yeah. Also, you'd spend that much money, you spend X hundreds of dollars on a gun, you probably want to use it for something.
Yeah.
Now, you're probably taking it to the range or shooting out on your property,
right,
whatever, but
right,
you probably wanted to put it to what is honestly its real use, which is not practice.
Right.
But hunting or killing something, shooting and destroying something.
Sure. No, I mean, I do think that, you know, there is a little bit of charge from that, and they capture that. But, yeah, I feel like Chris Pine could have done, you know, just showed up with his ski mask and his gun and stuck up Splooge's wife from Breaking Bad and the bank manager and had done all that in a much more controlled fashion.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But I don't know. Maybe there was something. The other thing is I feel like there's a couple of the pieces of the plot that I don't have a firm command over because I just saw this once that maybe would have cleared it up. Like, there might have been something where his brother was vital to setting up the lawyer deal, but surely not. Chris Pine character, Toby, had to have done all that.
Yeah, I mean, the lawyer deal.
Well, you know how they had the trust established and the way that, and they like was that lawyer some crooked contact that,
Oh, you talking about Devil?
Yeah, Devil from Justified.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what his role was either exactly.
Well, he was the guy who set up the trust and helped them,
yeah,
you know,
okay,
do all the legal paperwork to make sure the bank couldn't come back around. Which, that's mm-hmm. the other thing, is I'm kind of skeptical that it seemed there's this line at the end where Jeff Bridges was talking about, you know, he had already retired and this is already long gone, and the trail's gone cold, and they had killed, you know, Ben Foster's character, and it was kind of an open and shut case. Where he was kind of like, there's got to be something more to this. And they mentioned that the bank's not even fighting it. And I found that hard to believe, because the bank just lost out on millions of dollars, and it's pretty easy to connect the dots here. It seems like no matter what legal instrument that he could have produced, they would have found the way to fuck him out of that.
Yeah, I would have thought too. Like, it's one thing to say, I'm going to stand here and watch you fax this fucking thing because mm-hmm. I don't trust you. But that banker could have just been like, well, office is closed. Or like the fax comes in and they don't get a response because they're out for the day or whatever.
Or with civil forfeiture, like, forfeiture, what it is, like you've got $50,000 in cash that,
right.
You know, I know it's that any amount over... It used to be 10,000, might be 1,000 that a casino issues. Mm-hmm. They have to give like notice to the IRS and
right.
to the Department of Homeland Security because mm-hmm. it's you know an easy way to launder money. Now yeah. I feel like a lot of you got shot. You know, like there'd have been a lot of questions that he couldn't have answered. But the movie wants us to think that none of that's a problem. That this
right, which seems a little too convenient for me.
Right,
but you know, that's a movie.
Yeah, I mean, but I, you know, that could be, I could see that being a hang up. Like, you know, if you just don't buy the premise, then, you know.
No, I mean, the premise is fine. And I actually think it's nice that, you know, he's stealing the bank's money to then pay the bank off, right?
Right.
He's paying them with their own money,
right?
Which I think is pretty funny and some pretty, it's pretty nice justice there.
Although it's funny when he comes up and he's like, we don't want your money, just the bank's money. It's like, I wish Jimmy Stewart had stumbled in. It's like, but it's everybody's money. That money's in Julie's house and in the waitress's right. house. And it's not as works at all. It's like, come on. I just watched It's a Wonderful Life. I know how this works.
Yeah.
What else? Well, how do we get? I feel like I've been talking forever, and I can't remember what we were talking about.
I mean, I was just talking about, you know, some of the things that I didn't like about the plot. But
oh, right, right.
Let me ask you this: Jeff Bridges definitely has a distinct acting style. And
does he?
He's done it in a couple of movies that I've seen now. Why does he talk like he has 8 lips?
8 lips?
Yeah. What like his words can't get past the sheer volume of his lips in order to say something without...
Because I was going to say, I don't think it's fair to say that he has one... I mean, this might be the old man Jeff Bridges acting style.
Yeah.
Although I don't know. I didn't see Wild at Heart.
Right. No, I agree. He didn't have this when he was younger. Like, you go back to, what, K-Pax or whatever. He doesn't talk like he's got... coins in his mouth all the time.
Or the Big Lebowski or whatever. Right. I feel like that he was intentionally doing the Rooster Cogburn, you know,
okay.
very
yeah.
old, maybe a little bit of nerve damage going on.
Maybe that's all I've seen him in lately.
He's got
those
a
couple
mean
of
case of lower lip cancer from the tobacco he's kept tucked in there for 40, 50 years.
What does he do in the Iron Man movies? I forget what his performance is like
he's,
there.
He's like, Tony Stark made
bald.
This in a cave! Like, it's, yeah, he's definitely not 8 lips there.
No, he's just bald.
He's just bald, yeah. Bald and bearded.
Just shaved his head.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's exactly his performance from True Grit.
Right.
It's exactly.
It is, yeah.
And maybe that's what he's so like, you know, John Wayne only need one fucking character to portray a cowboy. So when I'm doing a cowboy, then I'm going to be this one character, damn it.
That's fine, I guess. Let's talk about Ben Foster a little bit, because I feel like his shtick is wearing a little thin for me.
Really?
So I think he's great in this movie, and I think he's great in like everything he does. And he's a really good actor.
Right.
But he does kind of the same thing in all of these movies that I've seen him in.
He
and,
is
and it's
very
starting
much,
to get like
he is very much the whack job from 3:10 to Yuma.
Yeah, very much.
But what else have we seen him in? I mean,
I've seen him in a lot of stuff.
I know
he
plays one of the angel characters in an X-Men, and he was kind of forgettable in that.
I was going to say, is that even how big of a part is that? Tiny, right?
Yeah, it's pretty small. Pretty small. I know I've seen him in a bunch of I know I've seen him in just a ton of different stuff, but I feel like he's a bit more of a chameleon because here he's a little bit thicker too.
Yeah, he is.
He's most of the other roles I've seen him in, he's been a lot more slender.
Yeah.
And not as beefy. But I don't know. I guess where I was going with before is it always drives me nuts to see this kind of hothead characters smashed up with some kind of more level-headed, but I feel like he redeemed himself just a little bit. Well,
by
taking
the heat.
So it's hard because a lot of the reason they're in the heat was his fault.
Right.
And he also killed a bunch of innocent people.
Uh-huh.
But he did do a fairly noble kind of heroic thing in that last stand where he let his brother get away. But that's a very complicated...
Save the family branch.
It's a very complicated moral calculus.
For sure.
Was it worth getting Chris Pine's two kids out of crushing the disease of poverty, as he calls it?
Mm-hmm.
Was it worth those four people's lives? Especially when you find out that the Gil Birmingham character, he had a big family, according to Jeff Bridges. So why is their lives less important than Chris Pine's kids?
I don't think they are. Yeah. I think Ben Foster's a bad guy.
Well, but by extension is Chris Pine. He's in his mind, no one's asked to die.
Yeah.
I'm just stealing from the bank to get to do them dirty the way they're doing me dirty. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's kind of and even Lindsay in her feedback, she compares this directly to Breaking Bad. A good man doing bad things for an ultimately good purpose. And we didn't see how far his character would survive or would fall in a 2-hour movie. But, Jeff Bridges says something like, you're never going to get over this. You're never going to get away from this. This is something that's going to haunt you the rest of your days.
Sure.
And I kind of feel like that's probably true.
I mean, he did, in a way, get his brother killed.
His brother killed, four other innocent people killed. And that's a taint. I'm thinking if I was him and something bad happens to my children or they run into some tough times, do you chalk up the karma?
If your kids ran into a bad time?
Yeah, you try to give them the easy street by shooting and killing people.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, I mean, that's no foundation to build any kind of life on.
Oh, sure, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So how much are the kids actually hearing about how terrible their father was? Because it doesn't seem like they're hearing any of that.
I don't know.
He's not on the news.
Well, his mom's probably been feeding him, a pretty big dose of your father's a piece of shit.
For a long time, not just because of the bank robbery stuff.
Right. He talks about how far behind he is on child support, and, there's probably a lot of promises made and not kept, and also Ben Foster asserts that she's the type of woman that was never going to be happy with him anyway. So there's all kinds of things going on wrong there. But
yeah, it also didn't feel right to me. This kid obviously has some serious problems with his dad.
Sure,
the one that we see, and it seems to me that they're all smoothed over with a beer and a promise of you're rich.
Well,
a promise of a ranch. I mean, why does that smooth over years of neglect?
Why do you think
the relationship, his attitude, his body language, everything changes toward his father by the end of that.
I don't know. It's interesting because I've seen with my nephew, his dad's a real piece of shit, and he's 14 now. And if his dad puts forth just a little bit of effort, you'd think that he fucking, landed on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there is something it probably takes a long time to flip the switch from my dad is an asshole or from my dad is not around and maybe he's a scoundrel to my dad's just complete piece of shit and he's not worth anything and I'm never going to think about him again.
Sure.
And I wonder if some you know, I don't have that relationship with my dad. I'm really only observing it secondhand through entertainment, but I bet there is some kind of, like, you know, psychological hold.
Yeah.
That seems like it's also something that perpetuates through generations. I don't know.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't know. There was another good scene, which was the vicious beating of the guy in the Camaro or the Charger or whatever the hell that was.
Yeah.
That was pretty brutal.
Uh-huh. Chris Pine came out of nowhere to just wreck, beat that punk to the ground.
Yeah.
Where did that come from?
The vicious beating?
I mean,
it came from this guy being an asshole.
No. Where did that come out of Chris Pine? Because those brothers seem like they're very different. Was that scene to illustrate that had a few of life's Plinko chips gone in a different slot that Chris Pine would have been his brother and his brother would have been Chris Pine? Or was
or maybe to illustrate the past that this guy has had. You know, I mean, he's not a choir boy. He's brighter than his brother. And yes, he, you know, cares for his family. But yeah, he's not this innocent soul. He's a violent person as well, if the mood strikes him or if circumstances hit just right.
Can I discuss the biggest problem I have with this movie?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Why does a place that serves only T-bones and baked potato? I mean, they make it clear that that's the only... And corn pretty on clear. The cob and green beans. That's all you're going to get out of this fucking place. Mm-hmm. Why do they have ketchup and mustard on the table?
Well, ketchup... Okay, ketchup... I would excuse because of the potato. Like, maybe you want to chop up your potato into, like, fry-like.
Baked potato?
I mean, you put them on French fries.
I mean, yeah, I guess it's one of those
things.
You
put them on hash browns.
You're going to squirt on your mashed potatoes? How far are you going to go,
sure,
man?
Yeah.
No.
I'll put ketchup on mashed potatoes any day of the week.
Have you?
No.
Okay.
But so, I could
but
see
you're,
it.
Or I, but
potatoes.
That,
but mustard? That's a real
And I was
stinker.
Thinking, like, I know there are some mouth-breathing troglodytes out there to put ketchup on steak. They're also the type of people to get their steak well fucking done. This place clearly doesn't truck with that shit.
Right.
It's like, you want your steak medium rare, and there is no, like, I like the cut of this place's jib. I would like to make reservations for this place.
Yeah.
I bet they make a mean T-bone. But, like, why does this restaurant have ketchup and mustard on a table? I don't know.
I wouldn't have stuck around long enough to ask that question. I'd have been out the door in a second.
Maybe it's just they put it there just for the old lady to have something else to bitch about. Like, if you go to reach for the ketchup, what the fuck are you doing reaching for that ketchup?
I bet they have a fountain drink dispenser, too. You go over there and start to push that Coke Zero button.
Right.
What the fuck?
It's just tea comes out. It has that Coke, Sprite,
carbonated
Pepsi,
tea.
But it's just all tea. Yeah, that's the one thing. I was trying to think of, because the dialogue is pretty funny. There's some things, like, I pride myself in a lot of colorful expressions and euphemisms, but I've never heard the term "I got a shit like an old goat."
Neither
that cracked when Ben Foster said that at the it wasn't the casino, it was at
the diner.
Yeah, because he was actually going to go jack another bank.
Mm-hmm.
But I got you like an old goat. I'm gonna have to file that away for future use. That's hilarious. What about an old goat makes one?
Just, I mean, everything gets bad on the back end of a goat, I imagine.
Really?
Like, it starts bad. Yeah. A young goat.
I feel like goats are just shitting out
disgusting,
like,
shit.
I feel like they're just shitting out large pellets. Like, it's like an overgrown rabbit poop.
Well, it probably depends on what they eat, and they eat everything.
That's true.
So, like, can you imagine the things that come out of you when you eat?
Tin
shopping carts
tin speed bicycles, fluorescent light bulb tubes.
Man.
Yeah, that's probably he's essentially gonna shit a hardware store, is what he's saying.
So, yeah.
Okay, he's gonna shit a recycling plant.
Yep.
I
got one more question.
Okay.
That I'm gonna propound you with. So the end of this movie, clearly they wanted a moment where, like, there was high tension. Will they shoot each other? Won't they shoot each other at the end? When Jeff Bridges visits him on the ranch.
Yeah.
And they wanted to break that tension with the family coming on.
Uh-huh.
You're going to tell me that the family doesn't recognize the guy. This woman doesn't recognize the guy who killed her brother-in-law, and the kids don't recognize the guy who killed their uncle?
Well,
it was all over TV. We saw his face all over the TV.
We saw Jeff Bridges' face?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Because I thought that was when...
Like the hero that shot him from 500 yards or whatever.
I guess that would be.
They were making a big deal about it. And it's a small fucking town.
Because I'm pay attention to police shootings, and maybe they show the officer's face, but like I find that, I mean, I guess if the guy shot my brother-in-law, I would remember
that.
I would
think
so. I don't know about the kids.
They clearly just wanted to use this as a device to relieve this tension.
Yeah.
And they didn't consider, oh, maybe these people would know who this guy is instead. And that it would just actually escalate the whole situation.
Yeah. I mean, they had this thing, so let me try to invent a possible reason. They okay. had this kind of conceit where they were taking a road trip. Like, I'm not sure if the Indian casino was in Oklahoma mm-hmm. or if the banks they were robbing were predominantly on the border of Oklahoma and Texas. But I wonder if, like, that was big local news and the spot that they did it. And, you know, in his hometown, there wasn't a lot of mention. Because that wouldn't have been a national news story, would it?
Well, they purposely kept it small, like the small-time nature of the robberies.
Yeah.
They didn't want the government,
the
involved, like
the
FBI, get involved.
Yeah.
So but,
I don't think this is on CNN.
Yeah, you're right. And probably be on local news, though, I imagine. Like,
but local at Texas is fucking huge. Like, if something happens big in San Antonio, I don't know necessarily that it's news in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If a guy from your hometown robs a bank, a bunch of banks,
and has a shootout,
police shootout with
not just the police,
sniped.
But like the townsfolk.
Right, all the townsfolk are involved. There's a chase, there's shootings and murders, and a police officer snipes him from a distance. Like, in that town, they're going to cover that.
Yeah.
I have to imagine.
Yeah, I guess so. Even if the town's way far away.
I also had a little bit of a problem with Jeff Bridges' ability to read the situation. Like, he seems a little too clued in on the plot here.
Nothing seemed particularly out of what. So give me an example.
So maybe I just don't understand how he figured out that they were going to post to rob that bank, but I didn't figure it out. I have no idea how he knew that.
I think that there was three banks left they could have robbed.
Mm-hmm.
And he had seen a pattern where they were going to smaller banks, not larger banks, and that they hadn't robbed this bank yet. If they were going, and their pattern was to show up early in the morning, and he quickly identified, because his partner's like, well, except for that one that happened in middle afternoon, he's like, yeah, but I think that partner just went rogue, and maybe that was like a crime of opportunity. But they've always showed up first thing in the morning. It's first thing in the morning and this bank hasn't been robbed. There's only one other that fits the profile, because the partner said, well, there's the other one. And he goes, well, that's too big for them. And then the other one was closed. So
there's
a process of elimination. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a couple of those. I agree with you. The mechanics don't I didn't wrap my head around that and the particulars of the legal deal that they were making. But
well, it didn't help that whole conversation was interrupted multiple times.
Right.
And they were trying to play this, like, just let me get through this,
right,
what I'm trying to say here.
Right. And also, Jeff Bridges was speaking through eight lips, apparently.
Right.
So, and we weren't watching with subtitles on, so.
That's true.
You're only getting every third word out of him.
Yeah.
But anyway, anything else you want to talk about? Because she's got a couple of things that she, Lindsay's, would like to propound us with.
Yeah, let's see what she's got.
Okay. So what do you guys make, because I think we've talked about our feelings about Marcus and his feelings for Alberto, his emotional constipation there. What do you guys make of the final scene? Do you think there would have been a duel between Marcus and Toby had Toby's ex-wife not arrived when she did? Who do you think would have won in that fight, Marcus or Toby?
I think Toby's probably going to win that.
I mean, he's got the shotgun drawn and half pointed at him.
Right.
Like,
and he's a young man, and Jeff Bridges has got to creak and crack and get to his pistol.
True. But I actually was kind of surprised that Jeff Bridges' character, Marcus, made that final shot. Like, that was a good fucking shot.
It was a good shot, and he was winded, and he just really just pulled it together and got him.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I feel like you're right, though. There's no way, if someone's got a shotgun trained on you, that you're going to be able to, from a seated position. They're standing, you're seated. They got a gun up and drawn. You've got to reach around, because it looked like it was either going to be in his boot or maybe in the back of his waistband.
Yeah, I didn't see it on him.
Yeah, even when he walked away, like, so it might have been. Maybe he wasn't even armed.
Maybe.
I mean, because I have a... The other thing is, like, I guess he's an old Texas lawman that has nothing to lose. So maybe he does draw down on the guy, because he's kind of suicidal at this point. He's got, you know, throughout the whole movie, they're talking about, man, when you retire, you're going to be have nothing to do.
Yeah.
You're not going to be the guy that sits out on a porch or, you know, haunts this T-bone restaurant. You're going to be a sad, sorry sack of shit. Mm-hmm. Maybe he wanted Toby to give him peace.
He might have, yeah.
Do you think they actually have a drawdown later on?
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah. You know what? That character, Marcus, doesn't seem like the kind of guy who can let this go when he's got a hunch.
Not just that, but I think Toby's haunted too. So, like, one of those guys are one bender away from showing up drunk at the other's house, and then you'll see what happens.
Yeah. Sad thing is, that's not even Toby's house.
Like, well, yeah.
He's just at the ranch fixing it up.
He did give him his street address, though. Because he said, yeah, I live at such and such in town anytime you want to stop by. Because, I don't think he wants him showing up strapped at his family's house. She wants to know if were we rooting for the brothers the whole movie. Do you think?
Kinda, yeah.
Do you think what they are doing is right or justified? And was there a point where you stopped rooting for the brothers? This is the age old. When did you turn against Walt?
I don't think I ever turned against Toby.
Yeah.
I think I turned against whatever his brother's name is.
I was never Ben for Foster. His brother.
Yeah, Tanner. I mean, that's probably the better way to put it.
Like, the whole time I'm thinking, God damn, Chris Pine, you need to find a Spock.
So I guess early on they came
as a
pair.
You're shacked up with a drunk Scotty. A drunk, dumb,
violent
fuck, surly Scotty.
Scotty.
Yeah.
So I guess near the beginning of this movie, before Ben Foster started killing people, they kind of came as a pair. So I wanted them to succeed.
Yes.
Not necessarily like one of them and the other can go fuck himself. But once Ben Foster starts killing people, I turn on him. I'm like, I'm fine if that guy dies, but Chris Pine still needs to get out of this.
Because not only is he fucking the plan, but he's also like I do believe that Toby was a good enough person that he was going to be haunted by this.
Yeah.
You know, he would have felt really good about providing for his family by robbing from the bank. Four or five people dying, including a cop, he probably feels pretty shitty about.
Yep.
So, yeah, I guess I stopped. I don't know. I didn't ever stop rooting. It's more like one of those tragic things where, boy, I wish none of those people had died. And I can't feel good about the movie as a result.
Sure.
I mean, not the movie, the situation the movie shows. Mm-hmm. How shocked were you that Alberto died? It seemed like Marcus would be the ranger to die in a blaze of glory since he was so close to retiring. Honestly, I thought both of the brothers would die. Like and the bank would win. Like, I thought we were going for a very, downer ending of a movie. Mm-hmm. And what I got was a lot more quiet and personal and ambiguous of an ending.
Sure.
So, yeah, when Alberto got shot, I was shocked.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Especially when they made it clear that he got shot in the face. And then when he moved his hat and his brains were blown out in it, I'm like, nope.
Yeah,
Roberto's just gone.
He's done. I'm glad they made that super clear right then and there, because I don't think Jeff Bridges' performance hits quite as hard if you're unsure whether his partner's dead.
Right.
So good on them in that moment.
Yeah, but I was very I think I might have even audibly gasped when he got shot.
Yeah.
What do you make of the Comanche ties into the movie? Tanner's last words is, "I am Lord of the Plains." Also in the casino scene when he says to the Comanche... the Comanche says to him, "I'm a Comanche. Do you know what that means?" It means enemy to everyone. Tanner says, "Do you know what that makes me? A Comanche."
Mm-hmm.
What do you make of that?
He's just that kind of guy. Doesn't give a fuck about anyone, anything. He's going to do what he wants. He's going to be an asshole, and people are just going to have to deal with it or kill him, I guess.
Well, they also made this interesting point where Alberto, before he got his brains blown out, is said that... You know, they had this racist repartee where Marcus is saying, "Oh, your people lived in caves for, X or amount of time." And he's like, "Well, your people did too." And he said, he goes, "We have a lot in common because at some point in time, someone fucked over your people and turned you into what you are now."
Mm-hmm.
And then you came to do it to the Indians. And now look around, the banks are now doing it to you.
Right.
So you got this other ruling class. It's all this. It's not a racial divide now. It's an economic divide.
Mm-hmm.
And turning these people into enemies to everyone. They're like, you see this in politics a lot. People are just like, fuck the world. Like, I just kind of want to see the world burn. I thought that was kind of interesting. Also, you know, the Comanche didn't have shit to say when he said that, you know.
I mean, he's right.
Yeah. Tanner literally is. Like, yeah. He's an enemy to everyone except for maybe his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, he smacks on his brother a time or two.
He does.
Where does this movie rank for you guys in terms of 2016 films? And that's where...
What a question.
Because I wanted to go, like, well, we just did this on the Baldies. I'll just go and look. And I'm like, oh, man. That's tough because, you know, we've gotten our top five, I think, and unless I fucked up this order or we didn't do it right. Arrival, Doctor Strange, Sully, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and Snowden. And we intentionally blended enjoyment and quality and,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is one of the best movies I saw in 2016. Wasn't the most entertaining movies I saw in 2016.
Oh, sure.
So yeah. What does that ultimately mean? It probably means something that's going to make a little bit of noise in some of the technical and writing and maybe performance categories of the of the Academy Awards. And
yeah, I think this is the most natural performance I've seen from Chris Pine, probably ever. Like, I really like him, you know, as James T. Kirk. I like him as whatever character he plays in Horrible Bosses 2. Mm. Like, fantastic character, just a dickhole through and through. But this just felt like a solid performance, like something that would be Oscar worthy, frankly, because I look at Chris Pine in Star Trek and I don't think he can pull this off.
Yeah. Like, he doesn't have this serious gear.
Right. But apparently he does.
Right.
He brought it in this.
Kind of like, you know, would you think, well, Josh Brolin is maybe a tough example because we've seen him do other impressive things before, No Country for Old Men. But, like, yeah, I guess anytime, Matthew McConaughey is a good example. Anytime you see, like, a Hollywood pretty boy or a Robert Downey Jr., when you see them do something that makes you be like, oh, wow, this guy's more than just a pretty face that first time. It's almost like the same way that you get when a comedic actor turns dramatic.
Right.
It's like, oh, well, we knew he's this one thing, and now he can do this other thing. That's, for some reason, impressive to people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that you're, like, but I don't know. I don't know. People grade celebrities on way too much of a fucking curve.
Right.
It's like everybody jizzes all over, you know, Peyton Manning because he's kind of funny. Or LeBron James because he has a sense of humor. It's like, so fucking what? Like, shouldn't we expect that from the majority of people?
I would think so.
But I don't know. Maybe that's like when you're in the top 0.001% of the world in anything. You've spent so much of your life doing that one thing.
Yeah.
But Chris Pine, what has Chris Pine spent his life doing? Being pretty?
No.
Like, that's what I'm saying.
Spent his life acting.
Right.
We should expect it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, then comic acting is still fucking acting, man. So why do we keep getting blown away when a funny man can frown as much as he can smack himself in the balls? Like,
because, comedy doesn't have the range of emotion that you need to show in a serious drama.
Yeah.
It's usually, there are some exceptions, certainly, but... Yeah, I was thoroughly impressed by his performance.
Yeah.
More so than anybody else in the movie. I think Jeff Bridges also excellent.
Yes.
Ben Foster excellent, but...
But those weren't as big a surprise.
Yeah.
I was really impressed with Gil Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
I've not seen him in much, honestly.
Just Twilight.
And I know I've seen him in other things, but that's the one that really sticks out in my mind.
Yeah.
And I thought he was... It was a weird, uncomfortable performance paired with Jeff Bridges, but maybe that was the point. They weren't making it easy to just, like, excuse and overlook Jeff Bridges' casual racism by having, you know, the Native American character make a bunch of stock white boy cracker, you know, pale face references.
Yeah, and I mean, if that's what you're going for, then I guess maybe it plays when you see the true nature of their relationship unveiled when the guy dies, right? Because then it's all laid bare. Like, Jeff Bridges obviously cares about him very much.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Bridges is definitely just busting his balls. I don't think he personally has any grief or any problem with
the
guy.
Is the way that Jeff Bridges is telling this man he loves him.
Right.
Because he cannot physically say the words.
And it's the same way that Chris Pine and Ben Foster do it, too. Like,
Yeah.
You know, he says, I love you, I mean it.
But
and
he's
then
not
he calls
looking him in the
fuck
eye.
Face, right? It's like,
and then he calls, then he says, fuck you. Like, that's, yeah. that's for, again, for better or worse, mostly worse, that's how Western men, or maybe even American men, that's how we roll. That's how we've
I mean,
been,
it's certainly how the
how
writer portrays all of the men in this movie. So,
but I don't think it's an unfair portrayal. Like, that's just kind of how it is. It's not maybe the way it should be, and maybe we'd be healthier if we were able to say these things without any being cloaked in irony.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely felt like how these guys would interact.
I would say maybe it's brushing... It's probably somewhere in the top 10 for me.
Yeah.
Of 2016 movies I saw last year.
Yeah. Oh, it's easily in the top 10, maybe even the top 5 for me, because like it okay. wouldn't dethrone Arrival, but I think it's better than Sully.
Hmm.
It's similar in 10 Cloverfield Lane because it rests its laurels on some really superior performances.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, like, you know, it's better than Doctor Strange, but Doctor Strange is a hell of a lot more fun.
Yeah.
Is it better than Snowden?
Man, it's tough. So,
because Snowden's like not even that good, except for the social message.
Yeah,
and that's only if you agree with it.
Right, right. I don't think Snowden is an exceptional movie on the face of it.
Right.
So it's interesting because I said early on in the podcast, you know, this was an okay movie, and I've come to realize how much I'm actually grading on a curve against every fucking movie I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and it's like, how do you compete with the classics of all time, right? And the nostalgia that I have for many of the movies I saw growing up.
Yeah.
And that's all going to get weighed against this movie. And, you know, I've seen this movie once. I saw it recently. It's I'm past the nostalgia point of my life. Like,
right, yeah. And that's the thing. Like, the older I get and the more – not even the older. The more media I see,
mm-hmm.
it's interesting how that affects, because
it
like
does, yeah.
you almost never see something entirely new, and when you do, it's like, holy shit, like I'm having that experience yeah. right now with The Young Pope. I had that experience with The Leftovers. Like, this is just something
yep.
that I didn't even know I needed, and I'm getting it. But what stands out are insane visuals
mm-hmm.
and insane performances, and you know, it's to the point where a excellent performance where a person is emoting and telling me what they're feeling is not doing it for me anymore. It's,
right.
Instead, it's the things that I notice are like Jeff Bridges, like those 5 seconds after he kills Tanner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's like, I didn't know how that character would react until he did. And I'm like, oh, that's exactly how he would do it.
Right.
It's not a stock. It's not, no, it's not any this big thing. It's just like, yeah, that's how this emotionally constipated beef jerky lawman of a person would react to these very conflicting stimulus that he's feeling and realizations he's having.
Right.
And that's where, like, I really sit up and take notice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, good dialogue still gets it, and like, you know, insane action. But I just, you know, it's kind of sad that we're probably not going to see very many news stories from this point forward in our lives.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I'm jaded on stories in the real world, right? I mm-hmm. almost have to go to sci-fi and fantasy to see things that are new and intriguing from a story standpoint, because
right.
they can do things that the real world just plain can't.
Right.
And I've seen so many real world movies. Like, how do you put this up against Apocalypse Now or The Godfather or
even like
No
said,
Country for Old
No
Men?
Country, like, or 3:10 to Yuma?
These are masterpieces of movies, and this movie doesn't quite reach that height, but maybe only because I've seen those movies.
Yeah.
Like, I could see myself watching this before I had seen No Country for Old Men and really thinking it was amazing.
But I still think of, like, how, like, Chris Pine looked when he was dealing with the banker at the end of the movie and wanting him to see him fax at the lawyer. I'll still remember,
mm-hmm. yep.
You know, Jeff Bridges' performance after his partner was shot. All those things will stick. And that's the thing, like, only a handful of movies raise that bar where
right.
I'll probably
right.
remember those particular things for a long, long time, if not the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's the other thing, is you start thinking about, that's you know, when people start dying, you know, like, if 20 years ago you'd have the in memoriam at the Oscar, and 90% of it was like, who the fuck is this person?
Right.
And then you'd have like Heath Ledger, you
sure.
know, the guys that dies of overdose or a car wreck. And now it's
yeah.
like, oh shit, I remember watching these people growing up and as an adult and how they made me feel. Like when Jeff Bridges dies, I'm going to think about like him being the dude and him being Rooster Cogburn and him being Jebediah Stang or whatever his character was in Iron Man. Yeah. And that's...
Is this going to be one of those roles, though?
Like I said, I do think that like I remember his character from True Grit, but I'm having a hard time. Like, I guess the thing that stands out in my mind that movie is that montage of him running with that girl in his hand, his arms. Yeah. Like, you know, this old ass man running in the snow, trying desperately to get this girl to a hospital or someone that can treat her snake bite before she dies. And how I really believed utterly in that scene. Yeah. But I do think that him shooting Tanner is going to be something I remember when he's gone. So that's pretty high praise.
I don't think this movie had the magic that's going to make it like a big contender come Oscar time.
No, I mean, did it get nominated? Right. Yeah, I know it got at least the bet because I was looking up the director and the writer, which we didn't even really spend much time talking about that.
Right,
and I made a lot of notes about it. This movie is written by Taylor Sheridan, who I guess was prominent as an actor for playing this police officer, David Hale, on Sons of Anarchy.
Hmm.
But he also directed the Denis Villeneuve Sicario that came out last year, which he got a WGA award for Best Original Screenplay. And he's also got an Oscar nomination for Best Original Screenplay for this movie. So he's making a little bit of noise.
All right.
And it's directed by David McKenzie, which I hadn't seen any of his movies, but he did direct something in 2013 called Perfect Sins, which is a sci-fi film starring Eva Green, who is the star of Penny Dreadful, and Ewan McGregor, who everybody knows. And I'm like, I know what I'm doing this weekend. I'm going to watch that movie. So I know it got a couple of those awards, and it wouldn't surprise me to hear that Jeff Bridges or maybe even Chris Pine got a nomination for a starring or supporting role.
Yeah.
But I don't know for a fact if that's happened. But for his best movie, like, it seems like Arrival's getting a lot of notice. It seems like, you know, this improbable love for La La Land is going around. But yeah. There you go.
Okay.
Congratulations, Lindsay, for besting all comers in your league. And congratulations on winning the league. Thank you for commissioning this podcast. I had an enjoyable time watching it. And honestly, this would have slipped my notice because this came and kind of went. It only cost like $12 million to make, and it made $36 million. So it tidy profit for the studios, but it didn't get a lot of like wide release love. Yeah. I'm actually kind of surprised I hadn't heard of it before because, like, I'm kind of, you know, Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine are people I pay attention to.
Yeah, it feels like one of those movies where you look back through an actor's catalog or history and you say, oh, they did that? I should probably check that out.
Right.
Oh, that has a lot of people in it that I like and I didn't realize they were in it and I'd never heard of this.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I caught it before, you know, Jeff Bridges dies and I go back through his catalog and start watching stuff. But yeah.
All right. Well, again, thanks, Lindsay. If you'd like to commission your podcast, your very own podcast, go to baldmove.com/shop and go. There's a bunch of community commissions where you can chip in $10 at a time to make it happen. Or you can click on the film canister and do your own commission podcast for a much higher price. Or you can wait till next year and contact Hatorian on the forums and try to win the Fantasy Football League. Those are the ways to commission a podcast as presently constructed. We'll be back with another one here sooner rather than later. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.